Hi, and welcome to the American Male Spouse Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Smith. This week, I had the chance to talk to Shay Brown. Her husband is an F-22 pilot who is currently a test pilot student out at Edwards Air Force Base. And Shay is an incredible advocate for spouse employment. So during this episode, we talk about the struggles that come with trying to maintain employment as a military spouse. And Shay also shares a number of really great resources for those who are seeking employment. We have included a number of those resources in the notes for this episode, so be sure to check those out. There are some Facebook pages, a brochure that Shay created, as well as a couple other links that you might find helpful. So make sure that you check those out. And if you'd like to read a little bit more and find another spot to find all of those links, you can check out www.theamericanmilespouse.com and be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The American Male Spouse. Enjoy the episode.
I'm Shay Brown. I am an American male spouse, as we are. I grew up in a military family, actually. So both of my parents were in the Army. Oh. And yeah, so I've pretty much known the military my whole life. Kind of settled in Oklahoma, and that's where I say I'm from. I'm from Oklahoma.
Oh, because, and not to get way off the rails right at the beginning, but you do need to share your little claim to fame. Oh.
You're so right. So let me just start by saying my name is Shay Brown. I grew up in Oklahoma, and our school field trips were at the Tiger King Park in Oklahoma. And I have seen the Tiger King. I have held a Tiger King cub, which now I'm embarrassed to say, because apparently, you know, you shouldn't do that. But oh yeah, you go into the lobby and he has a TV playing his music videos. So oh, like funny. As an eighth grader, I went to that park. And that's basically the core of who I am.
Right. And that's really all this podcast is about. That's all we needed to talk about.
Yes.
Total sidetrack, but can't go without addressing
the Tiger King
defining moment. Right.
That's super, super weird. He used to like come to schools in Oklahoma with the Tigers. It's very bizarre.
Carry on. Tell me more about the rest of yourself. I won't make you talk about
that. Yes. So after my time spent at the Tiger Park in Oklahoma, I went to college, and I went to the University of Oklahoma. That's where I met my husband, Tucker, and he was in pilot training at the time. And I remember when I met him and he told me that he was in the military, I was kind of like, no, thank you. Like, I know that life. I've seen that life. I want no part of that life. But love is love. And we kind of just, you know, started dating, and it all went uphill from there. So, no, but it was good. And yeah, so that's kind of my background, I guess. A lot of military isms in my life. So,
how old were you when you guys settled in Oklahoma? Did you do a lot of the moving as a kid?
I definitely remember some of our early moves. Yeah, but we settled in Oklahoma when I was in the fourth grade.
Okay.
And then we had one move to Texas and then back to Oklahoma when I was in middle school.
Got it.
But I kind of returned to the same group of friends, so that moving back really wasn't as traumatic as when we moved from Japan to Oklahoma when I was in the fourth grade. It was like a really rough time for me as a kid, okay. I think. Okay. Yeah, but I'm really, really close with my siblings. So I have three sisters, three younger sisters, and an older brother. We're all really close in age. And I think the military definitely bonded us. Like, mm-hmm. There were times where we didn't have close friends, and we were and still are each other's very best friends. So I think that's a huge positive of growing up in a military family. If your parents do it right, your siblings are like lifelong best friends, which is mm-hmm. unique, I think.
That's great. Those are those things I love to hear with my tiny ones right now.
And I have to say, like, my dad deployed a few times. So even though we settled down in Oklahoma, my dad still went on deployments and stuff. And mm-hmm. I just remember as a kid, it was a totally normal thing. My mom was such a rock star that she was just like, yeah, your dad's on deployment. Like, this is how we're doing it. And mm-hmm. she was so strong through that, that I don't ever remember any of that as a negative part of my childhood.
That's great.
So I think you can come out just with some really unique life skills mm-hmm. and a pretty close family unit. So
yeah, and because I think that's something that I've heard from other people I've talked to who grew up in the military, who the same had just the fond memories mostly. Like you said, obviously mm-hmm. they were trying times, but I think that that's something that's become a major goal of mine at this point, because for me, not growing up, my dad was a Marine, but he got out when I was really young. So mm-hmm. not growing up with the same challenges that I know my girls are looking at, that's kind of my goal is, well, they don't know that those are challenges, or they don't know the other side of it. So let's just make it a positive and not make it the fact that, hey, you're moving all the time. Well, I didn't do that. So for me, I worry about that for them. But that's just their norm. So,
and you get to the point, I think, even as a kid, where you expect it and you know, like, you know, yeah. that in 3 years you're going to be moving mm-hmm. and you're going to make all new friends and your family's going to be there and you're going to get a new house. And like, there are exciting things about moves, and you just kind of have to focus on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're still like, we're at the age now where Annie, we kept talking about Florida, and now randomly she's like, where's Florida? And the other day, Cecilia answered her and says, this Florida, because that's what kids keep answering her. You're like, Annie, oh, all of this is Florida. The beach is Florida. Our house is Florida. You know,
we've arrived in Florida.
So you just said, Annie, this Florida.
That's so funny. Yeah. That's really funny.
It is. It's just a different world for them to get their heads around. And they're obviously just learning. So.
Yeah, they're little, but I moved when I was little. I mm-hmm. moved from North Carolina to Hawaii to Japan, like, and I'm sure that, you know, I don't remember any of those moves, but I also don't remember being traumatized and upset. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I think you remember the ultimate vibe of your family.
Yes.
So right. That's what you have to.
That's what they pick up on. And that's what I try to remind myself of, that they don't necessarily know what you're stressing about. They just remember, oh, cool, we got McDonald's and mm-hmm. played a game and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
100%. I really think that's true.
Yeah. So switching gears a little bit, mm-hmm. obviously I know this, but for people listening, you are such an advocate for spouse employment. And I actually the first time I really was ever in contact with you was about a job posting that I think your husband had shared, and my husband passed to me, and, you know, we chatted a little bit about, which we can even talk more about that at some point, but that was how we met. And I know that that's something that's important to you. So can you tell me more about how that came to be?
Yeah. So I am a huge advocate for military spouse employment, not in the in the sense of like everyone should work, but in the sense of military spouses who would like to work and are passionate about a career should have every opportunity given to them to pursue that. And I kind of got involved with it because when Tucker and I were stationed at Langley in Virginia, I went to grad school, and right out of grad school, I got like my dream job. I was absolutely obsessed with it. I worked for the Virginia Department of Health. I ran two really cool programs, the Zika Pregnancy and Infant Registry and the Critical Congenital Heart Defects Program. Mm. And it was just this, you know, goals job, you know, like I was doing what I really loved. I was having a lot of success. I got to publish some really cool papers with the CDC and March of Dimes. It was just a job that brought me a lot of joy and satisfaction in my life. And mm-hmm. it felt cool to say to people. Mm-hmm. And we moved to California, and I had no luck finding a job. I was super, you know, positive that I would find a job when I got here. And as the months of rejection just rolled through and basically just flattened me to a crying mush in my bed, I realized that, one, I definitely wasn't the only person feeling this way, but two, that my career was even more important to me than I thought it was. that I thought it would be. And so rather than just staying in my bed and crying, I set out to change the way spouse employment worked on Edwards Air Force Base. And so I got involved with this innovation team, and I presented a few solutions to the wing commander about military spouse employment and how it's really hard to find jobs, how it's really hard to find a good point of contact for those jobs. And we kind of put together a spouse employment committee. And basically through that process, I just met a ton of people on base. I met a ton of colonels who, and I met their spouses who were really interested in the movement. And then all of a sudden I was connected with all of these different opportunities on base. And I kind of just wanted everyone to have the opportunity to see those jobs. Mm-hmm. So I kind of made it my personal mission to find anyone I could a job. And I found a couple of people jobs, which it was really exciting at the time. And ultimately I myself found a job. But basically my passion I didn't really realize that I had for military spouse employment comes from my own struggle of mm-hmm. trying to find a job after a PCS.
Mm-hmm. And I think that absolutely having been in your position and been in those shoes, it's also really hard to not start to resent the lifestyle, because I was in the same boat where I had a job that was what I went to school for, that realistically paid me well, you know, paid me what I felt like I deserved for what I worked for and for the education that I had for it. And my background is in corporate retail, which does not typically exist in the same place that Air Force bases exist. Retail offices are in large cities typically and are near them. So pretty much as soon as Kyle and I were married, that was sort of the end of the corporate retail period of my life. And that's just such a bummer. And each time we move, for the heck of it, I'll Google, hey, maybe there's a random corporation I don't know about that's in Edwards, California or wherever. But it's something that I probably still struggle with, but that there's so many parts of the lifestyle that I enjoy that I get on board with or always was on board with or whatever. But that's one that just always kind of grinds my gears, no matter what life stage we're in. There have been times where I've chosen not to work, and even so, I still know that if I chose not to, I'd be sacrificing if I took a role, especially if I took something in person and all that kind of stuff. And so I think for me, not to get on my own soapbox about it, but I think that's something that is dramatically underlooked when it comes to retention for the active duty spouse, because there's so much that I don't think is taken into consideration about spouse contentment, spouse opportunity. And I can tell you that when my husband comes home to someone who's content, he probably likes the rest of his day more. And when I'm struggling, when I'm lamenting my own situation, that's because he cares about me and wants good things for me. That's hard for both of us. And I think that that's,
well, and it's something that the Air Force is really going to have to start thinking about, because when I gave my presentation to the wing commander about military spouse employment, I basically just went on this rant in front of the audience about military spouse employment. And one of the things that I said was, hey, my husband is an F-22, soon to be test pilot for the Air Force. You've invested money in him. You've invested time in him. And when that commitment comes to an end, he will come home and we will have a conversation about my career. It won't be about his career. It'll be about me and what I can do here. So if the military is not focusing on those career-driven spouses, they're not gonna keep those pilots and those critical people that they need in the Air Force.
Sure.
It's just, they're just not going to, because I will say, hey, you know what I want to do is I want to go work for the CDC in Atlanta. So can you find me a job that's like that anywhere? No, you can't. Okay, well,
then bye. How do I get to Atlanta? Right. What are we doing?
Yeah. Because, you know, and I think when I was talking to General Tykert about it, who is a huge champion for spouse employment, he was 100% on board. And I think it really helps that his wife actually has a PhD in chemistry, and she is a professor at the Naval Academy on the East Coast. And he kind of just totally understood where I was coming from. You know, I have passions and goals and this huge part of my identity that I don't get to have with me here because the military doesn't care, you know? Right. And I hope that by conversations, the mindset does kind of change.
Yeah. I just give you so much credit for being the advocate for that and for just speaking up and putting that in front of people who oftentimes aren't actively ignoring it, but it's not kind.
And I will say, I think we need to continue just putting it in the faces of leadership, because even just my voice and my opinion, I mean, fiscal year 2021 at Edwards Air Force Base, military spouse employment on base is top five priority for them. That's something that's not going to happen unless you're knocking on their door and saying, hey, listen to me, I have an idea. This is something we actually can fix. You just have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of leaders are just waiting for the opportunity to say yes to those types of ideas. And I think this group of military spouses that's in the military right now is just the group to make the change.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that there's the reality that a lot of the people who, even if they do want to see good things happen here, they aren't necessarily, that's not their job. Their job isn't spouse employment. Their job is wing commander or whatever, something else. So it's sort of, realistically, unless someone does it for them, does the legwork, tells them what needs to happen. I think there's a lot of things where you'll see, hey, I have a suggestion. Let's put in a stop sign here. And then the stop sign goes up because someone tells you, this is a problem, here's how we fix it. And they say, okay, great, thank you, because I don't have the capacity to have that ever acknowledged that on my own. And
well,
I think
that's sometimes they won't take that extra step of, so someone will come to them with a problem saying, people are just breezing through here and people are trying to cross the street, and they just present the problem rather than the solution. So if you just come to people with these problems, like I can't find a job, but you don't have a solution, they're going to say, wow, but yes, that's a problem, and then move on with their day.
Right.
Because
they're
not going to take the time to say, oh, well, maybe we need a stop sign, or, you know, hey, maybe we should make these jobs postings accessible to military spouses. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's kind of funny because I ended up getting the job that I have now at the med group on base, which is in my career field, because an email was sent out to military members on base about a job opening, and Tucker sent it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that job wasn't posted anywhere. I would have never found it if my husband, my military service member, hadn't had emailed that to me.
Right.
That's not okay.
Right.
Why are you sending jobs to everyone on base who already has a job? That makes no sense. You're not filling your vacancies, and military spouses aren't even able to apply to these jobs.
Right.
So that's something that they're fixing, which is awesome. But it just, yeah, I hope to be the voice of change, at least in my small little community. So.
Yeah. And you are. You definitely are having an impact. And I know you said that's something that's changing. What else do you want to see change?
I mean, as far as accessibility goes, that's a huge issue. But another thing that I'd like to see change is military spouses should have a leg up when they're applying for jobs as well, because oftentimes we're going up against people who don't have gaps in their employment, or we're going up against people who have done this exact set of job skills for 15 years, whereas some military spouses have had to do 3 years of this type of job set, 3 years of this type of job set, because we're having to be flexible with what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not fair. I mean, it's just not fair. And it should.
And that's the kind of thing too, with those different, when you jump around, where if you weren't a military spouse, it would look like you didn't have something you were passionate about or you weren't sure what you wanted to do, instead of, hey, this is what was available and look at how quickly I learned it, which is
exactly
what's really happening.
And so there is a military spouse preference program that does exist, and it's great. And it talks about how military spouses are supposed to be given a preference when they're up against someone of equal skills, basically. Mm-hmm. So if I'm competing with someone who has very similar resume, I should be automatically hired under this law, basically. Mm-hmm. But the military has kind of gotten around that by doing direct hire authority, which means that they don't have to follow those rules. Mm. And they don't have to post the jobs. And it's because it's faster and they don't have to look at everyone's resume. They can hire whoever they want.
And I will say, I had an interesting experience with that where I applied to a job on USA Jobs, which I feel like ominous music should play in the background when I say USA.
Yeah, it's boo. USA Jobs is the worst.
Right? So I applied to this job. It was admittedly, you know, below my experience level, but I was more so just thinking, hey, I just want to do something full-time was my thought process at the time. And I got the email, you know, you get all the different automated emails. So I get the email that says something along the lines of, you've been deemed qualified, or, you know, you meet the qualifications. And then I don't know if I got another one, but at some point I get an email that said essentially that I was rejected. And upon the more that I dug in, and I actually ended up like reaching out to the woman whose like contact info was listed on the job, because not to toot my own horn, I'm at least interview of me qualified, you know, like there's no way that there's anything on this paperwork that should exclude me from being considered. So it turns out basically I had checked the, yes, I'm a military spouse. And then it was something, it was like a link you had to click to a PDF you had to click that had a link that didn't work. So if you looked up the link, essentially I left off one of the pieces of the spouse preference, like prove, like I think maybe it was like my marriage certificate.
Your self checklist that you had.
Yeah, and it wasn't the checklist, which I only knew about because you gave me, you know.
Right. But
it was, I think, like the marriage certificate. It was something.
Oh, that, some other sort of requirement
but
for it.
Whatever it was, the way that the system worked, because of the automation of it, because basically you figure it goes into almost like a shoot where it's like, okay, military spouse, check. And then because I didn't have all whatever six of the boxes checked, it just like dumps you out of consideration. And I'm like, then just consider me like a regular person.
Yeah.
You know, like I was basically removed from consideration prior to, as far as I'm aware, any actual human even seeing it, because of what was, I understand, meant to help me.
Right.
It's like you give me these nine different hoops to jump through that after talking to her and like digging and digging and digging, I'm like, hang on. Like it was because of this thing on this dead link that I didn't have, you know, whatever, that was how I would have known. And so.
And she knew that that's why it got rejected. Like she knows there's a problem. And I get that it's not her job to like fix USA Jobs, right. But like she knew exactly what happened because it probably happens all the time. Like,
yes. She had a very, very professional, very, you know, canned response to it, which I appreciate her even taking the time to respond, because getting a response from people is its own hurdle. But anyway, that's totally just an example of the nonsense that in that case, I'm like, even when it's there to theoretically help, I would have been better off saying I wasn't a spouse because I'm overqualified for this role. And I like to think I would have at least been interviewed for it based on merit alone. So
it's a broken system,
right?
And it needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is that I think in the past couple of years, they've done a few things to try to make it easier, and it's just made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had this fake move to Eglin. We were supposed to move to Eglin. We like bought a house. Our orders got canceled. But when we went to Eglin to look at houses, I checked in with the civilian personnel on base and I said, hey, I'm a military spouse. We're going to be moving here. I heard there's military spouse preference. Can you help me? And they had a whole system. They filled out the paperwork for me. And then they basically did almost a career matching service where I would tell them the jobs that I was interested in, and then civilian personnel was responsible for basically arranging these interviews for me. Like, I got the true military spouse preference. So they've changed it. At least here at Edwards, it doesn't work that way, and that civilian personnel is very hands-off. So rather than having to register with the Air Force Base, now, lucky us, we can just submit the form to USA Jobs ourselves. So we don't have to go to civilian personnel and have them do it for us. And it's like, I don't know what genius decided that civilian personnel didn't need to be involved.
Yeah.
But like, that's not a service. That's the opposite of a service. It's basically just saying, oh, well, you can figure it out on your own. And yeah, it's like, yeah, we can, but is it going to take us 6 months? Is it going to take us 150 job applications? Because right, it's not worth it.
And like, it's fun for anyone who either hasn't used USA Jobs or just is not a military spouse. It is not the same process as applying for a normal job. It's not the same resume structure. It's not, like, none of it's the same. So it's its own entirely unique beast where, you know, to defend myself, where it's very easy to miss a step or to not recognize, because again, as an example, never in my life have I needed to provide a marriage certificate for a job.
Yes, and you have to provide, it's insane the things that they make you do. And I actually, Tucker and I did so much research on USA Jobs and like how to apply and get your preference. Mm-hmm. On some of the military spouse preference jobs, they don't even post that it's military spouse preference, because all jobs on USA Jobs are supposed to be USA or are supposed to be military spouse preference.
Okay.
So theoretically, what you should do is submit your self checklist, submit your marriage certificate, and submit your PCS orders.
And that's what it actually was that I forgot, was the PCS
orders. PCS orders. Yeah. Because you can only apply for military spouse preference if you're within that 2-year window of your PCS.
Right. Which is ridiculous. Completely ridiculous.
I'm sorry. And then to not say that it's military spouse preference, you just have to figure out on your own that these types of jobs are military spouse preference and these types of jobs aren't. Like, come on.
So anyway, I can just complain, but that's unhelpful. So, so on a similar note though, what are some resources? Because I know you've helped me with that. For instance, even this, the preference form, but what are some resources that spouses may not know are available to them?
Well, unfortunately, we're kind of in this, you kind of have to go out there and find information about the specific place that you're at. Mm-hmm. But I think a good place to start is the military spouse employment, just Google search, because you'll come up with a lot of documents that will help you understand what you're qualified for as a military spouse and what you aren't, as far as how you can get employed. So Google's great, but also there's tons of Facebook groups out there. There's tons of people, military spouses in your career field, in my career field, in every career field, and they're all willing to help you however they can on
That's
these Facebook
point.
Groups. And then another thing that you might want to ask, because they don't tell you this, is if you're looking for a job on base, go to civilian personnel, find their building, go in and ask them what job board they're using to post their jobs, because not all of the jobs are posted on USA Jobs. Like here at Edwards Air Force Base, they use a website service called Yellow, Y-E-L-L-O.
So they're not every base uses USA Jobs. That's like brand new information to me. And kind of maddening.
Yeah. So there's a group of Air Force bases. It's not just Edwards that uses Yellow.
Okay.
So I would ask civilian personnel where they're posting their non-USA jobs.
Okay.
So that's huge. And then once you find that job board, it's going to open up all kinds of opportunities. Also, you can find base job postings on LinkedIn and Monster and Indeed and search everywhere. Because even if you're in a remote location like Edwards and you think, I don't want to drive to Palmdale, Indeed has jobs that are on base too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
do you know much about, and this is, I guess, potentially just rumor mill, but do you know much about requirements that they have for posting things publicly, because that's something I've heard, that sometimes they'll post a job that is actually filled, or that they have somebody in the pipeline for, or whatever the case may be, where I guess I'm curious, because I'd love if that weren't necessarily true, because that sometimes feels like, well, then I'm just wasting my time. What are the chances that this is, you know, they're real jobs, but are they really available? Are they really open to anyone?
I would say that the rumor mill is totally true, and yeah, that people and hiring managers can post jobs that they know exactly who they want to fill that position. And if it's under direct hire authority, unless you're a veteran, you're not getting preference for that job, and they don't have to even look at your resume. They don't even have to look.
Yeah.
So
is there a way to know if something is under direct hire authority?
Yeah, it should say in the job posting, okay, if it's DHA, it should say that. I mean, if it's posted on Indeed, or if it's not posted on USA Jobs, you can probably assume that it's direct hire authority, because a lot of government jobs are required to be posted on USA Jobs. It just depends on, it's complicated. It depends on where the money's coming from for the job, and it depends on the grade of the job. It depends on the need of the job, because you can get a specific job approved for direct hire authority, and then you can just send it out via email. I mean, I know there are some rules. I don't think you can just not post it at all. Like, I don't think you can send a job to your cousin and say, hey, this job's yours, just send me your resume. Uh-huh. There are legal rules for that. But my best advice is really just go to civilian personnel and have questions and find a champion in civilian personnel to give you information.
Yeah.
If anyone is at Edwards Air Force Base, I can tell you that her name is Michelle Lovato, and she works in civilian personnel, and she's an advocate for military spouse employment, and she will help you. And if you want to go to the Airman and Family Readiness Center, which also has some career opportunities, I would talk to Stephanie Warner. So those are your people. You're going to find people who are helpful, and you're going to find people who are not helpful. Mm-hmm. And you kind of just have to ignore the people who aren't, and maybe throw them under the bus later.
Yeah. And it's, I think what makes me sad, and as someone who's done it, it can be so discouraging that you do give up. And fortunately or unfortunately, we do have the luxury of being able to give up. You know, we're not,
yeah,
we don't need to work to pay rent. That's, you know, we're fortunate in that way. But I think that that's what happens so often. And that's also probably what slows progress, because there are a group of determined women and men who can get stuff done when we need to. But mm-hmm. at the same time, we pick our battles. And I think there's just a lot of us for whom this isn't a battle we choose. And that's why I think sometimes progress is slower. Because like you said, you have to be the squeaky wheel. You have to be knocking on doors. And a lot of us just apply for 100 jobs and hear back from one and give up. And I think that that's just, that's so sad for me, because I know that there are a lot of highly qualified people who aren't in, and there's a difference, because I've also chosen not to work and been very rewarded in those decisions when I've just, that's been what's right for me. And so there are plenty of people who choose not to work, and that's what's best for them. But it makes me sad that there are people who would feel more fulfilled at that stage in their life if they were working, who just don't, because of what a pain in the ass it is.
Well, and it's a lot of rejection. Like, right. It would have been very easy for me to say, well, there aren't job opportunities here for me, so I'm just going to not work while I'm here. LOL, I'm here for the rest of my life. But if I was just here for like 1 year or 3 years, you know, maybe I could convince myself that I could make it through, and it would be a huge sacrifice.
Right.
For myself as a person, but it would be so easy, you know, because it's so hard to find a job here.
Right.
And it sucks, and it makes you feel crappy when you know you're totally qualified mm-hmm. for this job, but they're not going to hire you as a secretary with your master's degree because Shannon, her brother-in-law works for whoever, you know, it's just, come on.
I mean, it's like nepotism to a nth degree that I don't think, because I'll say the same that in applying for really, when we moved here was my first sort of tango with USA Jobs. And before that, I pretty much have always worked in the civilian world. And if I applied for a job for which I knew I was qualified, I typically got an interview. If I didn't get an interview for something, it's typically because I knew it was a stretch or I kind of phoned it in and just used my resume from the last job or whatever. And so any sort of quote unquote rejection there, typically I was very easily comforted by whatever the reason was. It was because I knew I wasn't qualified because it was a place we just moved and the only job that was remotely close to my resume. So I threw my hat in the ring or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas with USA Jobs, when no one will even talk to me about a secretary position.
Yeah.
And it's not because... so bad. And I'm not saying...
And not to downgrade secretary positions, but if you're overqualified, I mean, if you want to get that secretary job and you're totally qualified and you don't get it, it's not fair.
Right. And that's the thing is, again, not to speak ill of a secretary position, I've been one, which is part of why it pisses me off.
Right.
Fine. If you don't want to acknowledge my experience in other areas as relevant, but it's like, no, I've been a secretary. I've done this job before. And that's part of what's maddening. Like I said, it's just a unique type of rejection that is because you can't really make sense of it because if you start to really question your resume, your skill set, all these different things because no one will even look at you. And then you start being like, shoot, maybe there's a really horrible typo on my resume. Maybe I said something terrible by accident.
it's
demoralizing.
It is demoralizing. It's so discouraging. Yeah. It's really hard. It's a very, and you know what it is? It's like, it's not a personal rejection, but it feels like a very personal rejection. Mm-hmm. It feels like someone is just saying no to you. Absolutely no. I'm not even going to open the door. No.
Right. The fact that it's often something that is a compromise for your career or for that it's not that, okay, no, this, an associate buyer or a digital marketing manager, like I'm not doing anything that if somebody walked up to me and said, hey, tell me what you would want to do tomorrow. It's not these things. It's not what I'm applying for. So it's like, I'm already coming to terms.
You're getting rejected for things you don't even want to do.
Right. It's like, it's like you put yourself out there for like a guy you don't actually like and he tells you no, you know?
Yes, it is exactly like that. Yeah. It's like begging for a date from someone that you don't even want to hang out with.
Right.
It's really sad. It makes you feel really
companionship.
Sad.
You just want a date, any day.
Any date. I just want to leave my house on a Friday night and no one wants me.
Exactly. It's the truth. And it's so sad how many incredibly intelligent, qualified people are in that exact same position. So at least misery often has company in that situation.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But at the same time, I think in some ways, being a military spouse who's super career oriented, it's not everybody, you know? And so it actually, for me, I found it kind of hard to connect to people, especially when I'm so desperately seeking a job. And I sometimes feel like I'm surrounded by people who aren't in that same struggle as me. And so I'm over here crying every night because I keep getting rejected and I'm surrounded by people who just, that's not their struggle. That's not what they're going through.
Right.
And it consumes you, you know, my job absolutely consumed me.
And in our situation in the military life, there are fewer spouses who work than there are outside of the military. So that puts you, I would imagine, more frequently in that position of being the one who kind of has trouble finding people to commiserate with that same struggle because that was something when I had kids, I was blessed to be surrounded by people who could relate to that struggle.
And I think in the military, you are often surrounded by people who can relate to that struggle because it's our age group. This is, we're all, a lot of my friends have young kids. And in some ways, I almost feel like, even though I don't have kids, I feel like I can relate more to someone who does have kids than someone who doesn't have, than I feel like someone who doesn't have a career and isn't looking for a career right now can relate to me who is all consumed by finding
that makes sense. Because I think that a lot of what a career is for people is very, it's very much an intrinsic motivation. It's very much about what drives you. And there are none of which are right or wrong, but different things drive different people. And I know for me, a big thing about work for me is that there is a certain type of validation that I get from working that is just different from the validation you get from whether it's parenting, whether it's marriage, whether it's friendships. It's just different. For me, a lot of it is that work is a very tangible motivation. It is a project I am producing. It is a graph, a PowerPoint, you know,
it's outside of a family.
Yes.
And it's a little just, outside of a family.
Right. So. And so for some people that is a motivator and for some people that isn't, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but it is hard when you don't have the same community of people to relate to, because when I did, I worked until Cecilia was a couple months old, obviously with maternity leaves and stuff in there. But when I chose not to work, I was internally nervous. I was nervous about how I would do and feel without that. But I felt so safe about having a community. I had amazing friends who were stay-at-home moms who I was so excited to have more time with, who like who crushed stay-at-home mom life, where I was like, this is great. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I'm just going to do what they're doing because they're crushing it. And there are regularly examples like that. And I think that's where, again, I just give you so much credit, because there aren't as many women who are meeting with the wing commander, telling them what a problem opportunity is for women in the workforce in the military. And that's huge. And that takes, it takes courage, especially when, like you said, it's not to say that you're the lone woman who wants a career. And
I
should also very much clarify, I mean, myself included, that there are plenty of stay-at-home moms who want a career. There are plenty of us who don't work because of the logistics of it, you know, or whatever. There's a million. Well,
I think like even taking away if you're a mom or if you're not a mom, I think that I relate and find common ground in someone who is career oriented versus someone who is focused on anything else, not even their kids, whatever project or goal that you're doing for yourself. I am not going to relate as well to struggle, because it's not my struggle.
And I think the biggest takeaway that we're probably both
trying to get at
is just that how much respect we have for every walk of military spouse life. And there's just different things that are right for different people. And
100%.
Unfortunately, if what's right for you is having a career, that can be really, really hard. It's really hard to make happen in a way that pays you what you're worth and fulfills you and all the other thousand things that we have to take into account when trying to find a job. But
yeah, exactly.
So shifting slightly, which by the way, I will reemphasize, because I know you've got those great resources that you mentioned. I'm going to put those in the notes. We'll put the Facebook links. We'll put the names. Just even, I know you mentioned a couple of different offices on bases to talk to. We'll put the names where people want to seek out.
Perfect.
That's very helpful to me too. And we can probably even, I'll figure out, we can put a link to the spouse preference form, because
that's a good idea.
You sent that to me and it is not super easy to find if someone doesn't email it to you. So
it sure isn't.
Nothing is. Nothing is. Weird. Yeah. All right. So tell me, and this can be about career, this can be about anything, but tell me what you've learned since you first became a military spouse.
I think what I've learned about being a military spouse that I didn't really realized being a military kid is that military spouses have to have some real grit. If you want a career, you have to fight for it. If you want your family life to be functioning and happy and satisfying, you have to work really hard. And I mean, everything that you want as a military spouse, you have to really go for it or you're just not going to have it. And so what I've learned about being a military spouse is that you really have to be a little scrappy and you have to get what you want in whatever way that you can. I mean, you That's want so close true. Friends, you want to hang out with people, you better put yourself out there. You better find things in common with people that you don't think you have in common with. And you have to make it a priority, an actual, maybe you have to write it down, a real priority.
That's great, because it's also just oftentimes the way things have to be done for us are countercultural. They're whatever it is. It's, you know, raising a family, for instance. Okay, your goals are for everyone to have dinner together. Well, good luck, because your husband's gone. You know, like just little things. It's like, all right, so how do we make it work instead? How do we still have family, have raised kids who feel like both their parents are invested in them when one is. How do we make a career when we live in the middle of nowhere and there is one job available, you know? And it's just not, because you can't move to the jobs, which is what someone might consider in another way of life. And so it's true, we have to come up with different ways to make things happen.
Yeah, you have to be creative and you have to not give up. And you have this struggle, you voice this struggle to your friends. And I feel like military spouses, their natural mindset is, okay, well, what's the solution? We don't just say like, oh, this is hard, whatever. You are innovative, you are creative, you come up with a solution. And It's something that is unique, I think, to being a military spouse. Like, you just have to. You can't give up.
Yep, that's true. And even if it just means changing how you look at it, because I know for me, in moving here, I started recognizing the job opportunities and kind of what it would mean for us, and ultimately sort of had to look at things differently and had to look at the positives of not working, look at how I could thrive there, what I could do, how I can spend my time, how I can still feel fulfilled. And so it just takes creativity in whatever arena just to make it work.
Yes. It takes a lot of mental strength. And I also think military spouses, I think, unlike some other people in the world, we know ourselves so well because we're very in tune with what we need. We're very aware of like what specifically we're missing, how we're going to fill that void, and whatever, wherever the void's coming from, you know, just like you said, like you understand what your struggle is going to be when you get to Florida. Mm-hmm. And your mind goes, how do I fill these things that need to get filled?
Sure.
And you make adjustments. It's very interesting how well we know ourselves, I think.
Yeah, because that's great, because it's like we do go through these sort of, everything gets taken away and then you go somewhere else, you know, you lose your friend group, your job, your home, and then you start over. So you're very aware of what's missing. And so you have to figure out how you're filling that back in.
Yeah. And which of those things impact you emotionally the most?
Mm-hmm.
So what is my priority here? I moved to a new place. I'm unhappy. It's a new, I feel like you have this moment of being unhappy. It's fine if you don't, but you have this moment of being unhappy and you say, what are my priorities? For me, it's find a friend. That's like top priority for me when I move somewhere. Find a friend, you need an ally. Mm-hmm. And then two, moving here, it was find a job. And I didn't obviously find my dream job until I'd been here for, you know, 8 months, but I was a substitute teacher. And that temporarily filled that void for me of feeling like I needed to have some purpose outside of the home. Mm-hmm. And it's Military spouses are pretty scrappy. Like, they make it work.
That's very true. That's a great point. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for fellow military spouses?
I just think for other military spouses, my number one advice would be to not give up. And, you know, as far as finding a job goes, know that search is really hard for a lot of people. You're not alone. You're not the only one struggling through this. And, you know, it's only a matter of time before something hits. And do what you can and use what you have to make it work. And yeah, just don't give up. I mean, because the rejection is really hard, but the rejection is not you. You are not being rejected. Maybe you aren't being seen, but you aren't being rejected.
That's so
and funny. You might be able to, if you really want to go for it, you might be able to figure out how you can be seen, because that was probably my biggest struggle here, was just not being seen. And I'm actually thinking, like, really, just don't give up. Like, really, use your head and get in the game, because there's this job board here on base. It's yellow. And I applied for job after job after job that I was super qualified for. And always automated email. Your resume has not been forwarded to the hiring manager. Job after job. And I'm like, who the heck is forwarding these resumes or not to the hiring manager? I'd like to know, because who is responsible for this decision? And I did some digging and I got a name. I got a name of the guy who reviews all the resumes and decides whether or not they get forwarded to the hiring managers. And I literally called him and I was like, hey, bleep. I don't want to throw him under the bus, but hey, whatever your name is, Joe Schmo. I'd love to have a meeting with you. I'd love to talk to you about military spouse employment. You know, secretly being like, I'm also going to talk to you about this BS of rejecting all of my resumes.
Right.
So I meet with him. He's like, yeah, sure. I'd love to talk to you. I went into his office, had a great conversation about military spouse employment. And towards the end, I was like, yeah, it's super weird, because like, I've applied for all these jobs, I'm super qualified, but my resume just keeps getting not forwarded to the hiring managers. And he was like, oh, yeah, what's your name again? Yeah, you've just been applying to all kinds of stuff. And I was like, yeah, and I haven't been forwarded along ever. And he goes, oh, well, you don't want these jobs. These jobs aren't like what you really want to do, is it? And I'm like, well, no, but I'd like to do something with my life rather than stay home with my dogs all day.
Yeah, that's not for him to decide. Yeah.
His call. And I kind of was just talking to him about it and kind of helping him see the reason, you know, in his madness.
Yeah.
So I go home and out of nowhere, my applications start going to hiring managers. Every single job I applied for after my meeting with him was forwarded to a hiring manager.
Wow.
Now, that is to say, that's definitely not how things should work.
Right.
Like,
right.
You shouldn't have to call Bob down at Yellow headquarters to, you know, set up a face-to-face about your resume. But at the same time, like, you are your own biggest advocate.
Right. That's true.
No one is going to fight for your job and your career like you will.
Right.
So I would just say, don't give up. Go all in. You're not alone. Do it. That's my advice.
That's excellent advice. How would you want your husband to describe you?
I would want my husband to describe me as independent, as a hard worker, as a good friend, and maybe someone who's bold.
I like that. I'd say the girl who marches to the hiring manager and asks what's going on with your resume is definitely bold. And I like
that. I told Tucker, because I was such a hot mess through this job search, We actually talked about setting up a billboard right outside of base, those billboards that have McDonald's ads on them. Yeah. I was like, we're just going to get one. It's like $1,000 to do. We were going to do it. It's, you can get a billboard with your face on it and it would just say, hire me, you know, and then you're like top four job qualities on your resume. And we like actually considered it. And he was like, you're so insane that you would do that. And I'm like, I care about this.
Well, you know, and then you can at least feel like you've exhausted your options because you hear about those sorts of crazy things working all the time. So
you have no idea. Get yourself a radio ad. Like there's lots of options.
Right. Just
to go for it.
You just gotta get people talking. That would be amazing. I would love that so much.
So
tell me about a fellow military spouse that changed you.
There have been so many incredible military spouses that I've come in contact with over our several years in the military. Mm-hmm. But I think the person who comes to mind when I think of someone who has impacted me the most is a military spouse named Brittany Reed. I don't know if you know who that is, but she is a lawyer from Kentucky. Her husband is a TPS grad and she's super career oriented. She has an adorable little son and she is just an inspiration to me. And she's one of the first people upon arriving at Edwards who validated my need for a career and who said, I get it. I am the same way. And she kind of just encouraged me to make a difference rather than just complain about it.
Okay.
And she's also kind of my inspiration in that, like, I want to help other military spouses find jobs in whatever way that I can. She did the same for me. I mean, she printed my resume and handed it out to people on base. And that's the kind of person that you want in your corner.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So she's just really, really awesome. And I seriously doubt she would ever think that I would say her name as someone who has made an impact, but she totally has. She's awesome.
I mean, that's such a testament to spouses just getting stuff done because we're going to make it work right now. We're going to get the thing done that needs to happen. And that's just what I think so much of the, as much as there is that needs to change about spouse hiring right now, the best thing you can have is another spouse as your advocate, someone who has done it, someone with the experience, someone like you, you know, who you're the Brittany to so many people who just says, here's what you need to do.
Princess, that's so nice.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I obviously, we were at Edwards for a short time. I didn't end up working there, but just your willingness to help was huge. And in what feels like an absolute abyss of, especially the first time you start trying to figure out USA jobs, to have people, and you know, Teresa is a huge help for me too, just people who are like, what is this thing? What does this even mean? How does this work?
It's
a different beast.
The military is a very unique community in that if you share a common struggle with someone, which you do, you always do, you're just not alone. Like you totally have an ally. You totally have someone who just gets it. I mean, Brittany did not know me. She had no reason to speak for me in front of anyone, you know, but she's like, oh, well, this is my friend Shay and she would be a great employee. She has no idea if I would be a good employee, but like, she's telling the whole, like everyone she can get in touch with that I would be a great employee. And it's just, I would do that for anyone.
Right.
You know, and I have like,
that you run up. I mean, the odds of a fellow military spouse being someone who's going to go in and kick ass are so good that it's, you know, it's a pretty safe bet to say this person is going to be a quick learner and they're going to be scrappy and they're going to want to impress you on day one. And they're going to be, you know, all these different things that are just, that's just sort of the cloth that most of us are cut from. So,
I have no hesitation telling any hiring manager that this military spouse would be perfect for this job.
Right.
If I never met her, if I didn't even look at her resume, like I would just say, you're going to love her. Everybody loves her. She's great. Hire her now. Won't make a better decision. And
I have exactly zero reasons why you shouldn't hire her because I've never met her. I know nothing about her, but
No pros, no cons. She's great. So true.
All right. So the last part here is our little rapid fire. Just first one is your favorite place you've ever lived.
Virginia.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We went up to Langley just once when we were in North Carolina. It was great there. It's really cute.
Langley, it was so fun. And I think it was the place, but it was also just like that time of just, it was our first assignment out of the B course. We were there for like 4 years. We had great friends. Like I loved living in Virginia.
Yeah. First place you want to travel after COVID?
Oh, COVID.
Nice.
Oh, COVID. I really want to go to New Zealand. That was like on our place that we really wanted to go this winter after graduation, and it's not looking promising, but yeah. New Zealand, number one, I'm coming for you. COVID free.
Yeah. Well, they are doing great with COVID, so they're not going to let you in for
a while. I'm never going to go there again. They're going to be like, oh, Americans aren't allowed here ever. Actually,
ever, you guys are the worst. Okay. What is your favorite way to waste time?
Oh, watching Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I could watch hours of Netflix.
You and Teresa, she always kills me with these random. She's, like, always ahead of the curve. She'll tell me about a show.
You know what it is? I feel like, you know, on Netflix home screen where it has, like, the recommendations?
Yeah.
I'll let those sit there for, like, a couple of weeks. I'm like, I don't really want to watch this too hot to handle business. Yeah. But Teresa's like, oh, Netflix is telling me this is good. I'm going to watch it now.
Yes.
And it's incredible. I should say, I know we're not on this topic anymore, but Teresa has been one of my closest allies in this job hunt. And I feel like she's definitely been someone that if I hadn't had her, I would have been really lost, because she was that ally of like, she knew my struggle. She got my struggle. And we went through that, like, totally together.
Yep.
So I should definitely say that Teresa, I would have felt very alone in the job hunt if it hadn't been for, you know, my partner who was also going through the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So,
she was in the
and she too. Found an incredible job at NASA, and I got my job at the med group literally within like weeks of each other. So it was just like this huge, we were so excited. It was great.
And those are just both such great testaments to just not giving up, and having obviously been a little bit more in tune with her struggle as she was going through it, how discouraged she would get, and the jobs that she, you know, I know she'd considered taking jobs that weren't really right, because you just get so weary. And she's like, I'm ready to say no. Is this good enough kind of thing? And just that she ended up with such a great role makes me so happy for her and for both of you, because
we went into battle.
Yeah, you did.
We went into battle and we came out victorious, and it was pretty cool to look back on now. But
yeah, because it was a marathon, not a sprint for you both.
Yeah. Number one, find a friend.
Right. That is
priority number one. So
she's a great one.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the biggest, well, this is their obvious answer maybe here, but what would you say is the biggest challenge of military spouse life?
Oh, well, I mean, finding a job. Finding a job in your career field.
Yeah.
That's been definitely it was the biggest struggle for me.
Sure. Yeah. And what is your favorite thing about mil spouse life?
My favorite thing about mil spouse life. That's kind of a hard one too, because it's the opposite. Like, I have this one thing that I view as a major negative about being a military spouse, and that's the career aspect of things. And then I can just think of so many positives.
Sure.
Like, I actually love moving and finding a new community and finding new places to go, like new places that are, you know, your own, that you kind of just, you discover on your own, because no one else, you know, has discovered it because you're alone. And then two, finding friends is, it's a challenge, but it's not like a negative. It's not like you can't, for me, it's not like you can't find friends. There are friends out there.
Right.
And that's
something that I kind of just occurred to me randomly, but something that people who are not military spouses don't always consider is that when you're moving to a new place, even though you might be the only brand new one, you're moving to always to communities of people who get it, who get and sometimes it's still really hard to find your people and your community, and it's, you can't understate how tough that can be, but yeah. It's not the same as if I think about my sister, for instance. If she just picked up and they just, you know, moved to Minnesota, it's different because probably most of the people in her new job in Minnesota have lived there or haven't just recently arrived, don't yeah. really, they're not.
No one's tune. Reaching out to your right. sister in Minnesota right. to be her friend.
Exactly. Like they're not yeah. in tune with all those feelings that come with that, because the odds of there being a large number of them who've just been through it are really slim. So
yeah,
we're lot more understanding, a lot more welcoming, all that good stuff. So.
And I think we're forced in a really great way to be very open-minded about our friend group, because yes. I will tell you that in college, I had a very specific friend group mm-hmm. and I can think of where they are now in their lives, and they're very similar to me. They are very career oriented. They've got their dog and their house, whatever, like mm-hmm. we have very similar things in common. However, some of my very best friends have no interest in a career, and yeah. they have the most amazing families and adorable kids that I love as my own. Like, that's not something you find outside right. of this community. That's such a positive thing. Like, I get to be friends with someone who I wouldn't necessarily pick out of a crowd on if first impression.
You never would cross paths with otherwise, because you're in just such different stages.
You would never like be in a position where this person would make the most sense for you to be their friend. And mm-hmm. so it's really, really cool. And I'm so thankful for that, because I would hate to be stuck in this little bubble of who I think I'm going to get along with, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes you get to end up being friends with people who are who you were 5 years ago, and maybe who you're going to be in 5 years, which I think is so cool, because I've crossed paths with people who I've even sometimes in ways where it's forced me to give more grace or something, because I'll say, oh, that was me at that age.
Yeah,
I felt I did that, or I thought that too. And just knowing that you don't have to have strong feelings about something, that's just because of where they are in their life right now. And that it's also so cool to see people, like I mentioned, friends who are stay-at-home moms or just people with older kids, watching what they do and having those examples, like up close views mm-hmm. of those examples, that's so valuable. And that's just something that I don't think is as common in other areas, because like you said, you're going to gravitate toward people who are in the same stage, because that's what brings you together. With us, it's just like, well, what brought us together is our husbands all brought us here.
Yeah.
Now let's make the best of it. Let's figure it out. Let's get to know each other.
Yeah, because I think like what you think that you might have in common with someone, like even when we were talking about earlier about like, I find it really easy to relate to people who are career oriented. Mm-hmm. That's not the only people that I want to be able to relate to.
Sure.
And it's probably the only people that I would relate to if I never was in the military, you know, mm-hmm. because that's what I would think would be the best option. But it's just not true, you know. It's not real, mm-hmm. you know. You have things in common with so many people.
For me, it has rounded me out, even in spite of myself sometimes, when you just are around someone who thinks differently, makes different decisions, whatever, but who you still love so much that mm-hmm. even if it's just sort of like just over time, you learn more about different ways of doing things, different decisions, different priorities that aren't wrong, that are just totally different from my own. And that I can still be so crazy about those people has helped me definitely just become a little more tolerant, a little more just, you know, think a little harder about things, I guess. And
we're patient people, us military spouses. We're very patient, because you can't just say like, oh, this person is not my style of person and just write mm-hmm. them off. Because mm-hmm. you're going to be stuck with them for a while. And so you give those second chances and those third chances and those fourth chances. And then you're like, oh, this person is actually my soul sister. And you had no idea.
True. You know, that's so true, because I can't think of anyone in the military community that I've ever just said, you know what, forget it. You know, it's not going to happen. And there are definitely people who like, who I haven't been as close to, but the number of people who strictly oftentimes because of proximity, you do choose to keep putting yourself out there, keep making conversation, keep, you know, having those speed friend dates over and over and over. And then you end up on common ground, whatever that common ground may be. And even if nothing else, you find where you just don't step with that person, you know,
Common ground. Yeah. Not everyone's going to be best friends. Right. That's definitely not what I'm saying, but you're not going to meet someone for the first time and you're looking for that potential. I think other than like, I think outside of the military, maybe people are looking for reasons why they don't need to be this person's friend. Yeah. But in the military, I'm looking for anything. Like, did you grow up in Oklahoma? Do you like dogs? Not do you have a dog, but do you like dogs? Like, do you like wine? Do you like coffee? Do you like, you know what I mean? Do you like hiking? Do you like, there's just, I'm searching for it. And
that's such a good point. That's a great way of putting it, that you really are looking for anything that brings you together.
Yeah. You ignore all the things. Yeah. You ignore all the things that you don't have in common. Mm-hmm. And you just don't care about, like, you just don't mind that you don't have those things in common because you appreciate the things that make you different, but you search out the things that make you friends. Yeah. And that's a gift.
That's true. That's very true. I like that. And I don't see myself as a patient person, but I'm going to take that feather and put it in my cap now because
you are totally patient. You are very, very patient. Like, you are.
You're sweet. I appreciate that. Well, you know, we can end this on a compliment for me because that's really
perfect.
What this is all about. So.
Your beauty and your grace.
I admire Shay and her determination so much. I am so thankful for her courage and the way that she puts herself out there and advocates for military spouses and their careers. As a reminder, there are some links in the notes to this episode, and I will also put them all on our website, theamericanmilspouse.com, so you can check those out in case any of those would be helpful to you. And I really hope that you all found something in this episode to help you just advocate for yourself, have courage, put yourself out there. And I can't wait to talk to you again next week.